Before we start the show, just wanted to let you know that Garden Fork now has a t-shirt and sweater shop. Very exciting, isn't it? There'll be a link in the show notes here to the show. If you want like a hoodie or a sweater or a t-shirt, that is now a real thing. All right, links to that stuff are in the show notes. Here we go. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. Thanks for downloading the show. It's me, Eric. I have a YouTube channel and this podcast, both called Garden Fork. It's eclectic DIY. It's a safe haven from the world. That is a big hint to something we'll talk about at the very end of the show. How's that for keeping you on the show? What's that called? Anyway, Aaron's here. Welcome, Aaron.
Hey, Eric.
We had a back channel discussion before the show started, so we're in a very good mood, aren't we?
We are, absolutely.
It was very exciting. We talked about website repair and fun stuff.
I bet everyone is very happy we had that off of the channel and not while we were recording.
But it is between Christmas and New Year's. It's that weird time where I never know what date is anyway, but I don't even know what day it is.
Well, I've been working regular hours except for on Christmas and New Year's, so I did have to have some awareness of what day it is, but I have no idea what the date is, to be honest.
Well, New Year's is coming, and then some more winter, but then spring is coming, and we're both looking forward to that.
I'm always looking forward to spring if it's winter.
So Erin is gardener par excellence. She has a YouTube channel called The Impatient Gardener that I watch, and you just rattle off the names of these plants. And to me, it's a purple coneflower, but you're like, well, it's a blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, how do you keep all that in your mind?
You know, I don't know how I do that, but at some point I made a conscious decision to like, because I understood that it was the only way to make sure you were getting the plant that you really wanted, because there's so many different purple coneflowers out there. And so are you talking about Echinacea purpurea or Echinacea pallida? So to me, it was the only way to make sure that I was getting exactly what I wanted when I saw a plant somewhere and I went to the nursery. And so I started making a conscious decision to start thinking about things in terms of botanical names. But I do try to use when I'm on the YouTube channel or when I'm on the blog, I try to use both names because I think using botanical names can be a big turnoff for people. People just hear, they're like, oh, that's Latin or something. I'm tuning out now. But I think one of the ways I learned is that when I was reading gardening magazines or gardening books that used both the common name and the botanical name, if you read both names, after a while, you just start linking those two names in your head. So I feel like maybe by using both names as often as I can, it helps people maybe link them in their own minds at some point.
I could see that. I really like your videos. I like how you've been working with, you did your window box for Christmas, and then you did a kind of a winter display with, well, dead sticks, basically, in some kind of urn thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, do you want to talk about that?
Would you like me to expand? Yeah, so I go, when it comes to like winter decorating and holiday decorating, I'm way more interested in anything involving outside than I am inside. I do a Christmas tree and stuff, but some years I don't. I could kind of take it or leave it sometimes, but I love doing containers outside. And then I leave those up for, you know, those containers look like that until usually March or whenever I just feel like getting out there and doing something in the yard. So it's color in the yard. It's very gray and brown here in winter. So it's some color and it's like a little bit of gardening, but it's really fun gardening because the beautiful thing about using like sticks and evergreens in a pot is that you don't have to worry about the water requirements. You don't have to worry about the light requirements. There are no rules. You can stick whatever you want in there because you don't have to worry about it growing. Really fun. So I always kind of go a little bit overboard, as I am wont to do in many cases. As you pointed out on multiple occasions, I tend to go a little bit overboard on things. So I did do a couple of really involved containers this year outside. One of which involved I bought those dead sticks, if you can believe that. So in the past, I have always gone and collected, you know, red twig dogwood. But my little secret location was ripped down by the county, unfortunately. And I was doing such a nice job of pruning it for them so that every year there'd be nice new red sticks, and they didn't seem to care. So I ended up this year to say, you know what, I'm actually going to spend a little bit of money on some different kinds of interesting branches that I wouldn't be able to just find out there. So I found a place in Minnesota. It's called Blue Sky Flower Farm. It's a woman-owned business. I think she might be a one-woman show. Maybe she brings in some people to help, but she grows fields of these things. So everything, it's not like she, sometimes I worry when you buy that stuff, somebody might be like running to like a, you know, state park or something and harvesting a bunch of stuff they should not be touching. So this is all very, very ethical. And she was very nice to work with. And I bought a big box of stuff from her that showed up. So I got curly willow, which was really fun. I got fantail willow, which is this really interesting thing. I got some beautiful yellow and red twig dogwood. So I just had a lot of fun with that. And I actually, all of those branches should actually hold pretty well, so I'm going to try to save most of those just reuse them next year. I just have to kind of find a spot to store them, but I'm going to reuse that stuff because it all should all hold their color for at least a couple of years. And some of those things I might actually try rooting them too, because of course willow is dead simple to root. Dogwood often roots for me I'll look out there in March or April and I'll see buds starting to form on the dogwood I jammed in a pot in December. So we'll see what happens with it, but I had a good time with it. And that I did that second video, which was more of like some of like the background stuff. So for instance, in the big pot that I did, I wanted it to look like there was a huge cluster of these branches, which of course would be incredibly expensive. So I actually just wired them all onto a tomato cage. And then I stuck a bunch of lights in the middle of it to kind of make it look like it was all lit from within. And it looked like a big bunch of fiery twigs, but it was really just sort of a circle of twigs.
I love that. It's I don't think I would ever do it, but it was fun to watch. And the window box that looks out from your kitchen sink, you posted on Instagram a picture of that at night, and it looked really nice as well.
Yeah, that's the best. I mean, that's sort of the thing that people don't think about with window boxes. First of all, we have a really sort of plain white house. It's white trim, white siding. I like it, but there's not a ton of interest going on the main part of the house. So when we put a window box outside one of our windows, a big one, many years ago now, probably, I don't know, 13 years ago or more, that was a great call because it adds so much interest. But what people don't sometimes think about is how much interest window boxes add when you're looking from the inside out. And particularly with this, when you light up a window box for like a winter container, it is so beautiful looking out. It creates this really kind of cozy glow in the kitchen, makes you want to do dishes maybe. Yeah. So
say it isn't so.
Right.
So I'm looking at the Fedco seed catalog, which is a vegetable and apple tree catalog. And I've got a bunch of stuff highlighted with my highlighter pen, and I only have a couple of raised beds. What are you thinking about in the garden this year?
Well, it's funny you bring that up because I have been sort of not allowing myself to open up those seed catalogs yet, because once I get into that frame of mind, there's no stopping me and I get sort of single-minded about things. So there's a couple of things I'm trying to like wrap up off my list. So what I will say is I have a stack of seed catalogs ready to go. Last year I grew, in the past in terms of squash, I've only grown summer squash. I always grow zucchini, but I've never grown like winter squashes until this past year. And I grew baby butternut squash, which is sort of it's a mini version, not the plants so much. The plants are still pretty big, but the butternut squashes that it produced were about perfect for two people, which is what we're feeding here. And they were so delicious and so wonderful. And I can't believe I never grew that before. So this year, I know I'm going to grow a lot of squash. Definitely that baby butternut again. There's another one called honey nut, which is apparently smaller again and quite sweet. There's one I grew last year called carnival, which is more of like an acorn type squash. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to play around more with squash, even though they're really space hogs, which is the problem with them. But those, I kept all those. And I mean, we, if I had had more, we'd still be eating them. But it was so wonderful to have food ready to go from the garden after I had already shut down the garden. And we enjoyed those so much. So for me, somehow out of the blue, I'm like really into squash now.
Did you have a problem with the squash vine borers or the squash bugs on those?
I'm knocking on wood right now. I had no problems whatsoever. And I can't explain why. I didn't do anything to prevent them or protect against them. I did keep an eye out for them, but I never saw any of them and I had no problems. So I'm just going to like knock on wood and hope that I'm lucky again. And then I'll have to do something to, you know, obviously there are ways to work around those things, but that's part of the reason why they were very enjoyable to grow because there was nothing to it for me.
I'm going to be more proactive with the BT spray, uh-huh. The Bacillus thuringiensis.
That sounds about right.
That's a pretty good word.
It's a good thing we can abbreviate that to BT. But yeah, that's good to have around.
Because the cabbage loopers or loppers, whatever they're called, go after my kale, and the squash vine borer and the squash bug go after the squash plants. And I think I just have to, the BT you spray on, and it's I think it's rated organic. But you have to respray it. And I think I just have to be every week. I just have to go out there and apply it again.
Yeah, I think it's good to be on a schedule. Do you ever use any kind of like floating row cover or anything to keep those cabbage butterflies from getting in there?
No, but I might now. I might actually from Fedco, you can order the super lightweight row cover. And yep. When you first plant them, I think that's when the cabbage loper first lays its eggs. I could be wrong mm-hmm. about that. But yeah, that is one thing. I mean, like everything, I try and make it low maintenance, but I think I need to be more proactive in the vegetable garden because it just got whacked this year.
Well, and really, if you're a little bit proactive, it ends up being less maintenance than trying to solve the problem later on anyway. So it is sort of low maintenance.
Oh, thank you.
See, I just justified that for you.
We know the smarter person in the room right now. So I'm thinking about buying that seed starting mat.
Oh, like a germination mat?
Yeah, but they're expensive. The good ones are expensive.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? They're so worth it. They're so, if you buy a good one, I mean, I keep adding additional ones, but I've been using the same one of them I've had for, I don't know, at least 12 years. So they don't go bad. I've not found them to go bad. They seem to do well. And it's amazing the difference it makes.
Because I have in the Fedco seed catalog, they sell them. And it's like the smaller one is $150. Does that sound right?
That sounds really expensive to me. I've never paid anywhere near that.
Okay. All right. I mean, they are it's a seed co-op. And, I guess they have a certain markup they need to make. But I'll yeah. look. If anyone has suggestions, it's radio@gardenfork.tv. My other thing is I wanted to plant carrots this year. Got any carrot planting tips?
So I don't have carrot planting tips because you know why? I never grow carrots. And I'll tell you why. It's not that I don't love a homegrown carrot because a homegrown carrot is a true pleasure. You cannot get a carrot that tastes that good anywhere else in the world, even at the farmer's market, because they frankly taste so damn good the moment you pull them out of the ground. But I don't grow carrots because like I use up the whole crop in one dinner. I mean, it takes a lot of like, you know, it's not like you eat one carrot, you right. eat like a bunch of carrots and then you've grown all these carrots and now you've like have dedicated half of a bed and you've eaten it up in like 3 nights. And I'm like, not worth the payoff there for me in terms of space. I'm stingy with my space. You really have to earn it in my garden. And for me, carrots are not where I'm going to use my space. So I don't ever grow carrots.
Okay.
Isn't that terrible?
No, it's not. It's efficient. I look at it as a challenge because I've never been able to get them to grow. So, but yeah, they do take up some space. I guess if I didn't have raised beds, it'd be easier. If I had, you know, a giant garden, I could dedicate 50 feet of row to carrots and not, you know, not even blink about it.
Yeah, you bet. I would do it for sure then. Absolutely. For me, it's strictly a space thing. I mean, I will say the one thing with carrots is you don't want your soil too rich, because if you get your soil too rich, that's when you get forking.
Yes.
So that's the one thing I know about carrots. And then I often see a meme in which somebody finds a wedding ring a carrot. I think this is total BS, by the way. But anyways, seems to happen. If you follow the internet, according to the internet, every time you grow a carrot, you're probably going to come up with somebody's wedding ring.
Yeah. I actually bought from Fedco, I've ordered a garlic specific fertilizer mix blended for growing garlic.
Did you use that when you planted your garlic then?
No, I dropped in a little bit of a generic time release fertilizer, the Milorganite actually, when I planted them. But I'm pretty sure the bed that I have them in has a nitrogen deficiency anyway. And this is it's from Fedco, so it's good. And my garlic cloves are always smaller than the seed garlic I used, and they are big nitrogen feeders. And I realized that the garlic beds I planted the garlic in this year or last fall, haven't really done a lot of supplementing and helping them along the past couple of years. So I thought, okay, I'm going to get this organic fertilizer and put it in there.
I might pick up some of that too, because I didn't put any fertilizer. In fact, we had such crazy weather in fall. It's actually much nicer now here than it was at the time I was planting my garlic. And I pretty much had to throw my garlic into the bed when I did, because the ground was freezing rapidly.
Yep.
So I had there was not a lot of intention on my part. I just sort of threw it in the ground to get it in there. So I didn't do any fertilizing at all when I planted it. I did have the beds nicely topped off with compost, but no fertilizer. So I maybe should pick some of that up too.
So I have a question about raised beds and amending with compost and, you know, aged manure. The soil level on my beds come right up to the top of the wood. And then if I'm going to, they're like, oh, you should be amending your soil and adding this. But when I add all that stuff, the soil level is falling over the edge of the vegetable bed. So should I take some soil out and then put in the compost and manure, or do I lay it on top and does it break down, or what do I do?
So your soil isn't compacting or compressing every year?
No, I don't step on it.
Well, neither do I, but it's really interesting because every year my beds go down about 5 inches.
Oh, wow.
So every year I'm actually topping off with compost, not just because I want to get compost in all my beds, but also to bring that soil level up, because it's compacting or compressing or going down. It's going somewhere.
Maybe you have sinkholes under your garden beds.
Listen, anything is possible. but to answer your question, I mean, I would say, it seems a little crazy to have to take soil out of a garden bed. That seems completely against what I'm thinking. But I would say, I mean, even an inch of compost on top, I mean, it should get worked in with the worms and things should be bringing that in. So if you can squeak on an inch without it coming over the top, otherwise maybe even like dig some holes in the middle and even put some, you know, little like blobs of compost in there might help.
All right.
I don't know. Or, you know, or just incorporate a little bit when you're planting something. I've been basically, you know, I'm trying to go much more no dig as much as possible.
Yeah,
pretty
that's
much,
what I do.
Pretty much very convinced that that's a really good thing. So I've been trying to just put that compost on top and not work it in and just let it sit there. And it's against what I learned. I mean, this is against what we all thought we were supposed to be doing when I think a lot of us started learning how to garden. So it takes me a little bit to just step back and put it on there and walk away. But we'll see. I think it's going to be a good thing. But it's odd, though, that you don't have any soil depletion. It's strange to me. I don't know where it goes, but I think a lot of people struggle with that. Maybe some of your listeners could weigh in on this.
radio@gardenfork.tv. You could tell us. Hey, real quick here. I was wondering if you wanted to join the Garden Fork email list. It's Maura Eric. I don't know if you want that or not. But the best way to do that, if you go to the gardenfork.tv site, there are signups all over the place. There should be one on every page. Also, in the show notes for this show, if you're listening to it in the iTunes app or one of the other podcast app, to click on the little, I think you click on the little text thumbnail of the show and the notes will pop up and there's a link in there. Or just go to gardenfork.tv and there should be a sign up there. All right. Thank you. So, in the flower department, what are you going to do this spring?
Oh God, I love growing flowers.
Yes, I know.
So much. I will tell you that while I have not allowed myself to open up a seed catalog yet,
I'm surprised at that. Knowing you the way I do, I'm like, that is a lot of self-control.
I just know that once I go down that rabbit hole, there's no coming out of it. And I get really obsessive about it. So I'm trying really hard to just like, you know, stay on task a little bit here. But I did go nuts with dahlias and I don't know what I'm doing because I love growing dahlias. I saved most of them. Although again, I was digging dahlias out of the snow, from underneath almost a foot of snow. Maybe 8 inches. We like to exaggerate in Wisconsin, yeah. But it was freezing cold. It was terrible. And some of them I'm not sure if I got to them early enough or if they got nipped before I got them, but I do overwinter my dahlias. And then I went and bought, I just did a blog post on this week, and I didn't even realize how many dahlias I had bought until I listed all the dahlias that I ordered. And I don't know what I'm thinking because I don't know where the heck they're going to go. But I always find a place to jam them in. So I have a lot of dahlias planned. But I think, you know, in terms of flowers, so Saranth is something I'm going to grow this year. Again, that's the honeywort, which I grew last year. It kind of looks like a succulent. It got a little floppier than I thought it was going to last year, but I'm going to grow some of that. More amaranth.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, the decorative amaranths. And there seems to be, I'm sure they've always been out there, but I think they're becoming more and more popular as cut flowers become more popular because they're really nice in bouquets. So I'm going to grow some more amaranth this year. Cosmos. So I don't know. I have to really dig into the seed catalogs a little bit. I will say that last year, you know, I have these four beds in my vegetable garden that I use for cut flowers. And last year I tried to start everything in those by sowing direct from seed and it didn't work right. So I think this year I'm going to try to start more things inside ahead of time to plant in those cutting flower beds, just because I think there's just too much going on in there and they just don't really have a chance to germinate well when there's so many other things going on around in those same beds. So
I love the amaranth. It's a tall plant and then it has this seed head that kind of flops over and it's beautiful. I don't really know how to describe it besides a bunch of little tiny flowers that become seeds and with this giant, it looks like a sunflower stalk. And then instead of a sunflower, it's this big golden head of cool stuff.
Yeah. And it looks like, there's so many different varieties, but some of the varieties look very much like dreadlocks sort of, if you envision like dreadlocks drooping down. And there's so many cool colors out there. So it's fun to see amaranth and those different kind of flowers becoming more popular, I think, because who knew there was this whole world of amaranth out there beyond the couple of varieties that have been popular forever. So Love Lies Bleeding is probably the most common.
Right.
There's, you know, amaranth that I think is an old cottage flower that a lot of people are familiar with, but there's a lot of different varieties.
And there's Fedco Seeds has them, but you can also eat the seed. It's amaranth is an edible. I don't know if it's considered a grain, but,
it's a grain. Yep. It's a grain.
So there you go. I'm like all excited.
That's good.
Do I sound
excited? Are you going to grow some of those this year?
I'm going to grow amaranth. And we actually, our neighbor gave us some dahlia tubers and they grew amazingly. So I dug them up and I tucked them in the root cellar. They're wrapped in newspaper in a crate right now.
Good for you. So that's great.
If they're in newspaper, is that okay? Or do I have to put them in the wood shavings or?
You can do, there's so many different ways to do it. In something like a root cellar, which is like, if you have a root cellar, that's such an optimal place to store that stuff. You're probably good with them wrapped in the newspaper. You know, that you just want to check, just check on them. If they're looking like they're starting to get a little dry, a little desiccated, you want probably just want to like mist it a little. So either mist the newspaper or you, I mean, that's the only problem. The tough part with overwintering dahlias is that they're super fussy about humidity. Too dry and they desiccate, too wet and they rot quickly. So you just have to, I just keep checking on mine and trying to adjust things as needed.
All right, cool. So would you like to hear what I was intimating about at the beginning of the show?
I am actually very excited to learn what that is.
It's another iTunes review.
Oh, yay.
Anyway, if you all would just take a moment and you're listening on your device somewhere within the Garden Fork Radio, you can leave a review for us fairly simply. I can't really explain how to do it. Just tap a couple times in the Garden Fork logo or something around there, and it'll say review, and then write something nice. So this is from TEH and then capital CECIL, so Tay Cecil. Am I ruining that? You will let me know, right? Informative and fun, 5 stars. Eric and crew are great. Yay. It's like sitting around the kitchen table catching up with friends. It's these days where bad news permeates almost all forms of entertainment. This is a very welcome refuge. I just wish I found Garden Fork earlier.
Oh, that's a really nice review.
Yeah, I do not look at the news a lot anymore. There is the Washington Post has this column called The Optimist, and I think that is great. And they you can sign up for an email from them, and they just did a roundup, which I'll put it in the link here, but they have the a decade of optimistic the decade in optimism here. And I just opened it up, and they're and so they have really cool things that happened in the decade, and like the ALS ice bucket challenge, you know, for people that have ALS, people would dump ice over their head and then challenge their friend to do it and make a video about it. So,
That's cool. That's good. We could all use a little optimism, perhaps,
yeah.
especially when we're in winter here. And you know, it's sometimes it can be a struggle to make it through winter with your sanity intact. So.
Here's one. A moment of awe. Photo of little girl captivated by Michelle Obama portrait goes viral. And she was looking at Michelle Obama's portrait, which is phenomenal, I think. And it's just, you know, that went and boom.
You know, I love stuff like that too because I love news photography, and it's so, you know, if anyone ever thinks that photography is not important or newspapers aren't important, and I'm not going to go off on a rant, I swear, but you know, it's photos like that you know, when the photo touches you, and a photo can touch you more than if that had been a video, it wouldn't have been that big of a deal. But there's something about photography, and it they can capture those moments that make you feel something. And I remember that photo very well.
Yeah, and the painting is just phenomenal. So that's cool. Right next to this in my inbox is another email from Harbor Freight Tools about another sale. So
Little balance for you there.
you have the seed catalog rabbit hole. I have the Harbor Freight Tools coupon rabbit hole.
Dangerous place.
You can't walk out of there without buying some, oh, I needed some new gloves, or oh, I got these sanding discs, you know?
Right. Everything you didn't know you needed.
All right, so I think this is to be the last podcast of the year. Oh, I forgot to mention. I guess maybe I'll put it in a little inner ad thing. I'll make one up. But Garden Fork now has hoodies and t-shirts.
Oh, I saw that. That's great. That's exciting. I guess I
And
should order one and wear it all the time.
yes. Well, you have the Impatient Gardener Patagonia vest or a
Yeah,
jacket or
well,
something.
that's a one-off.
Oh.
That's a one-off. It's not available to the public yet. But if anyone's interested, let me know. Maybe we should start an Impatient Gardener clothing line. because I need another project.
Well, I know, being Eric, I'll tell the story really quick, but YouTube partnered with one of these custom t-shirt sweatshirt companies called Teespring, Teespring, and they've been emailing me for 9 months. They're like, set up your Teespring shopping store, and then YouTube will show Garden Fork clothing merchandise under the video or to the side of the video, or I've seen it. Some other guys have it, people. And so December 23rd, I get an email from them that says 10% off coupon for your customers through New Year's Eve. And I'm like, okay, I'll finally make some sweatshirts or something and people can use this coupon code and get 10% off and buy themselves a present, because I already bought everyone else a present. And I set the whole thing up and I built two sweatshirts and two t-shirts. And while I was creating them, I set them all as private. You know, you can go public or private when you're saving the design, right? And then it says, okay, now create your storefront. And I dragged in the designs and I hit post. And then I got in the car and drove back to New York City. And I started getting these emails and like Will Wallace texted me and said, your t-shirt storefront is broken. And I'm like, oh man. And I boosted it on Facebook. I sent it out to everyone on email and I thought, oh, I'm going to get everyone some sweatshirts. And the whole thing was broken because the site lets you drag in your t-shirts and sweatshirts, even if they're listed as private.
Oh.
And so I couldn't figure it out for days. And so yesterday I finally figured it out.
Well, good. Have you sold any yet?
A couple. But after this podcast, there's going to be hundreds of people.
You better be ready. It's a good thing Teespring's in charge of taking care of that. I will say this about Teespring, though, which is that they actually have really nice quality stuff. Sometimes some of those printing companies the garments that they're selling are not great, and Teespring has nice garments and stuff. So it's nice that you're working with them.
Well, that's good to know, because yeah, you have your choice of a regular hoodie or a premium hoodie. And I think the difference is $7 in the price. But yeah, they're not cheap, but we make a little money on it. I mean, it helps pay the bills here. And I'll come up with new designs as we go forward here. But the first one is the done is better than perfect phrase. So you could have that on a hoodie or a t-shirt.
There you go. Perfect.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for the iTunes reviews, guys. So just... And any questions or comments, radio@gardenfork.tv. Aaron is on The Impatient Gardener on YouTube and theimpatientgardener.com. And you're on Instagram, it's the same thing?
Instagram is Impatient Gardener, no, The Impatient Gardener. It's all very convoluted. All right. But yes, it's just Impatient Gardener.
Oh, we didn't even talk about your drone, but we'll talk about that the next time.
We'll hit it up on the next time. Hopefully I'll still keep it in the air by the next time we can have the opportunity to talk about it.
All right, thanks everyone, and make it a great day. Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz. You can find more information about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes at hollowbooks.com. Our theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com. Other music used in the show is used under license from audioblocks.com.